Live from the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas, it's Cofield and Company.
That's the mark of a true sport, is finding a way to cheat on it.
Come on, this is basketball. You're a basketball guy.
You may have received a Valentine from me. Please understand this does not mean that I like you in any way.
It's time for Cofield and Company with Steve Cofield on ESPN Las Vegas.
The day of love. The day of love. Golden Nugget, JVT, John Von Tobel, and Adam Hill are hanging out. Steve Cofield in lovely Albuquerque getting ready for UNLV and New Mexico tomorrow. What's up, fellas?
Oh, this is my spot, Steve. There is no better place to be on a Friday night than downtown among the masses at the Golden Nugget, especially on a day like this. Valentine's Day? Come on. Come on down. Kick it to the Cadillac. Say what's up. That's great.
It's going to be crazy. People bending each other over on the table during the show.
JVT's trying to get my, you know, title as the downtown kid.
Well, see, the difference is between you and I, since I am a, you know, I rear a child now. Like, I barely get out. So when I get to come down here, it's
so
wild.
Exciting.
Oh, it's amazing. Adam, the one time we came down, I remember for my birthday, we were doing the ponies. I was betting the ponies, and I was going nuts. I didn't have a voice.
That is correct.
It's wild and woolly down there. Cadillac Mexican Kitchen, happy hour in about 55 minutes. The new grottos in the back, Chick-fil-A. Saltgrass is going to be open up in just a little bit. And, of course, 52 Friday show tonight. Did I hear Andy Bernard in the open? Was that that? I don't know what that was. What was
that? That's what you heard.
Ooh. I'm almost through the office. I just hope Andy and Aaron finish up together. Don't tell me.
Were they
spoilers.
Even together? I don't even know.
Don't tell me. Someone will ruin it for me. All right. Let's get going.
It's time for the three. Presented by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600.
What a freaking day. What a day. John, what were you joking about off the air? Complaining about many sports talk radio hosts in February. What do they always say?
Oh, slow time. Nothing to talk about. All-star break, no games, nothing.
Well, you know, I'll let people behind the curtain. I actually put together like a giant rundown of stories, and somehow they got blown out of my computer on the way here to Albuquerque, so we don't have any of them in the show.
Oh.
Yet we still don't have enough room for all the stuff that you guys had. So there's a ton going on. There's some unbelievable stories and sound bites to get to. Well, Adam, I know this one's right up your alley because you stood strong on this one. What did you think the entire time in the Myles Garrett story with Mason Rudolph and the swinging helmet?
I've always put the blame on Mason Rudolph. And listen, I'm not sugarcoating the fact that I'm incredibly biased in this situation. I've always thought Mason Rudolph is just a crumb of a human being. So I put the blame on him. Now, Myles Garrett is speaking out. We had some leaked information about what he had claimed, and now we're starting to get a little bit more of it. And I don't think you can just 100% take it at face value. But at the same time, you know, you listen to how Mason Rudolph talks about things, you listen to how Myles Garrett talks about things, it's pretty easy to pick sides.
Expand on that.
What's that?
Explain it.
Oh, sorry.
Please explain that.
I lost you there for a second.
Explain that. What does that mean?
Well, I just think, listen, I think what you have to do in these cases, and again, I'm biased going into it for sure, but Mason Rudolph is just like, we're not talking about these things, and he just comes off as an idiot when he talks. He just does in general. And Myles Garrett, and, you know, listen, sometimes you can be fooled in these cases and say, hey, one person sounds intelligent, one person sounds like an idiot. The one that sounds intelligent is usually right. That's not always the case. But in this case, like, Myles Garrett is certainly the one that comes off as much smarter, much more intelligent, much more introspective and thoughtful. And Mason Rudolph, when he talks about it, it comes off like the lump that he is.
So Myles Garrett was reinstated on Wednesday. And, John, we've got the sound bites. But what happened recently? Did he sit down with Mita Kimes?
Yeah, so Mita Kimes is doing some work for Outside the Lines, and he sat down with her, which, by the way, I do enjoy. So I enjoy Mita Kimes' work, but I like when interviews get serious, how, like, the reporters and the interviewers change their tone.
Oh, of course.
And so,
get
like,
quiet.
like, this interview is good, but, like, she changes the voice to, like, the NPR type of, so, Myles, tell me about what's going on here. But, yeah, there was a couple
But that said, John, did it work?
I think he did. So if you want, like, because we have these cuts, this first one, she asked him, you know, essentially just tell me from your angle what happened.
I mean, coming off the edge, there's probably like 10, but there's less than 15 seconds left. I remember that. And I didn't want to be on the field, but you know, since I was already out there, they were still throwing the ball, decided I was going to go make a play. So he still had the ball. He's winding back to throw. I'm going, you know, to hit him in the strike zone. No, I'm not trying to do anything illegal. I go to take him down. He says some words as we're going down.
Okay. Okay. That's a good point to cut it off there.
Yeah.
Okay.
I apologize. I thought I cut that off at a different part.
No. Well, just guess what the words may be. But he says he has no intent of getting dirty. Go ahead, John.
And then he continues after this, and he explains to not only what he alleges that Mason Rudolph called him, but his own personal feelings on actually using the N-word and its essential value, which is, I think, nothing to him.
I mean, he called me the N-word. He called me a stupid N-word. I don't say the N-word, whether it's, you know, with A, E-R. To me, personally, just shouldn't be said, and whether it's known by family, friends, anyone. And I don't want to use it because I don't want to, you know, find that appropriate around me for anyone to use. So when he said it, you know, it kind of sparked something, but I still tried to let it go and still walk away. Once he came back, it kind of, you know, kind of reignited the situation.
And then rage took over, as, you know, sometimes it does, especially if that actually did happen, which is completely understandable if it's going to enrage you. And the incident that unfolded in front of, you know, thousands and hundreds of thousands when they were watching Thursday Night Football, we saw what happened. And so to me, like, I feel like this is kind of interesting from the standpoint of, you know, a lot of people, when this initially happened, Adam, were like, oh, you know, if this happened on the field, why didn't you say anything about it? And I feel like, you know, he's doing this a second time. He must feel pretty strongly that, hey, this happened. He said something to me.
Listen, I think we need to stipulate right off the top, this is an easy, easy way to explain it. Like, whether it was said or not, I don't think any of us can ever know. I don't think any of us ever will know. And I'm not trying to make the case that he definitely said it. That is not what I'm saying. Because we know this has become the easy, well, no matter what happens, it happened. Like, no matter what happens, I can say that, and everybody just has to go with it. So I don't think anybody can make the case right now that he did or did not say it. I just go by listening to Myles Garrett talk about the situation, listening to Mason Rudolph talk about the situation, and then you judge who you think, you know, is in the right or is more accurate. Because also what Myles Garrett did not say, hey, he said it, so I had to go beat the hell out of him.
Yep.
He's like, it doesn't excuse it. He's like, I'm not excusing my actions. What I did was completely wrong. I'm just saying what happened and what went on out there. And again, even if he didn't say it, it's an easy thing for Myles Garrett to come out and be like, yeah, that's what he said, and then everybody has to take their opinions on it. I don't think you can do that. I don't think you can just say, hey, he definitely said it because Myles Garrett said he did. But you can listen to both of them explain their sides and then make a decision from there.
Have we seen a Mason Rudolph response?
I have not.
I haven't seen anything
either. Do you think he comes back with what he tried the first time around, and that was threatening legal action?
I don't know. I doubt it. I think he'll probably just let it go away or try to.
Yeah.
But I'm sure, you know, once they're back in, you know, OTAs or wherever, whenever he has to face media again, I'm sure he'll be asked about it, and we'll find out what he does to try to address it and talk about it.
And we always know this about these sort of situations, right? Like, let's even when you get into these sort of situations where if you want to do something legally, well, that means everything's going to get dug at. And maybe even if this didn't happen for Mason Rudolph, right, the other side in terms of Myles Garrett is going to do anything possible to shine a negative light on him, which means other things could come up, right, that Mason Rudolph probably doesn't want out there. So I don't know if it's worth all the trouble in the end, especially if, obviously, it's pretty strong to come out right away like he did and say the legal thing if he actually did say it. So.
I think that's a scare tactic. Now, the next step is to actually follow through on it, because we've seen many times in the past, you know, it's interesting, we're going to transition to baseball here. How many times in the past in baseball when someone was bad-mouthing the other, especially when it came to PED, someone's like, hey, I'm going to sue you, and then there was no lawsuit because, as John just pointed out, like, the absolute truth may come out. They're going to start digging. I mean, the best example recently was Pete Rose going after John Dowd, and all of a sudden it comes out – that now we've got someone willing to go on the record that Pete was potentially doinking a 15-year-old. Like, oh, wait, I didn't expect that to come back at me. It does, because digging will happen, and it could get even uglier. So spring training is just starting off here. We got pitchers and catchers, some of the players reporting. This Astros thing yesterday was a travesty. We'll get into the whole non-apology by Jim Crane and the players. But now you're getting some of the guys involved on the teams that feel like they were cheated. You're getting players on other teams who feel like the Astros cheated to get a World Series and win all these games the last 3 years. Cody Bellinger, you know what? I'm glad he's a young guy. I'm glad he's not measured. Boy, he came out. The Dodgers outfielder came out freaking guns a-blazing against the Astros.
Thought the apologies were whatever. I thought Jim Crane's was weak. I thought Manfred's punishment was weak, giving him immunity. I mean, these guys were cheating for 3 years. You know, I think what people don't realize is Altuve stole an MVP from Judge in 17. Everyone knows they stole the ring from us.
Wow.
That's awesome.
What were there, five different points he hit there? Crane was weak. The apologies by the players, weak, or whatever. The statement that Altuve stole an MVP, a World Series, was also stolen. And that Manfred sucked in this whole thing, too. Where do we begin?
I don't even know. I think where you begin is this is awesome, and this is going to continue. And there's more and more guys reporting to spring training, and they're going to be asked about it, and guys are fired up.
And there's nothing Rob Manfred can do.
Nope.
Because they tried a stupid, weak attempt to offer, you know, they offered immunity, but to control the narrative. Like, how are you going to control this? It's the arrogance of leaders like Rob Manfred. The lies and the cover-ups become so much worse than the original crime, because we're still debating the original crime, but now players are all over the league are like, this is total bullcrap on so many fronts. And then yesterday, the Astros came out and, hey, do what you want. If you don't want to apologize, then don't apologize. But by doing it half-assed, you know, Jim Crane, you know, it didn't affect the game. It did affect the game. Or no, it didn't affect the game. And then he's like, I didn't say it didn't affect the game. You just said it. You said it 30 seconds ago. They threw gasoline all over this fire. Freaking awesome.
It's incredible. And it's going to be fun to watch how all this plays out, how many guys speak out, what they all say. And like you said, there's nothing the league can really do. They've already made their decisions. They've already screwed up with not punishing any players. Players are now free to just go after them. There's nothing the Astros can do either, because they gave the weak apology. It was terrible. So what, are they going to come back and try to give a strong apology now? Because then you're just making it worse and worse and bearing it. And it's going to be fun to play out all season. I saw, I think it was Ross Stripling today. Ross Stripling was like, he was going to get traded to the AL West. And he was like, great, I'm going to play the Astros so I can throw at him now. Like, this is insane. This is just going to be going on all season long.
That's why what happened yesterday was brilliant. And I don't know, like, I know you guys like probably took the serious tone, and I can totally get it.
Well, we weren't on.
Oh, you weren't?
None of us were on.
Huh?
Yeah.
None of us were on yesterday. Was yesterday
it
Sunday?
It was Candy. It was McKinnell. They took a serious tone. They had a really good argument in the middle of the show with a Astros defender who basically threw up the argument that the Astros are scapegoats and everyone's cheating and apologies don't work, so don't apologize.
Oh, no, this is brilliant on multiple levels. The first of which, I mean, I watched every second of the press conference.
Oh, it was great.
And that's number one. People are going to be watching. They're going to MLB.com. They're going to be watching the next Yankees-Astros series. They're going to be watching spring training even to see what the interactions are going to be with a lot of these players. This is brilliant from the perspective of now all eyes are on Major League Baseball. Crane is a moron, and it was fantastic to watch that entire collapse. And the thing is, too, like what Major League Baseball did in terms of what Manfred just, hey, we can't punish the players, guys in the front office and the manager, you're done in terms of Hinch. All right, cool, now we can move on. And like, you're right, there's nothing we can do except sit back and reap the rewards that people are going to start watching our sport now so we can see more off-the-field stuff than anything else.
Manfred, let's just turn the page now. We're not turning the page, bro, because the participants who got cheated are not turning the page, and players are more outspoken now than they've ever been. By the way, we'll hit this later on, but imagine if this had actually happened during the steroid era, how short the steroid era may have been, instead of, you know, potentially sullying and ruining the reputation of the game for freaking 20-plus years, but no one would step out of line. Well, Bellinger's doing it. Other players are doing it. I've seen a couple of things here, a couple of reactions. One, Astros fans are now as insufferable as Patriots fans.
Yeah.
They have the same tone. with the, you know, we got caught, but everyone else is doing it. We're, you know, we're being targeted. Shut up. Here's another great one.
We're the victims of our success.
Yep. Here's another great one. Our buddy Tony Miller threw one out yesterday, and it's actually worth thinking about. If we want the Astros players, like the guys still on the Astros with the non-apologies, to be hit and hit hard, what about guys like Gerrit Cole? What about if the Red Sox are entangled in this thing, what about Mookie Betts? What do you do with those guys? I'll give you a trade as a Yankee fan. You ready? I will take a lifetime ban for Gerrit Cole. He's not on the Yankees, but the entire roster from the 2017 Astros, out of baseball. Let's do the trade. Come on. Let's go. Because that's another one where someone will throw it out there like, well, the Yankees have someone. All right, he's out. Yeah. Your 34 guys who were on the roster at different points in the year, they're all gone. Done.
I'm down with this. I don't know. I can't remember. I think it was like Freddie and Fitzsimmons here. They were talking about this. Like, yeah, you can't punish the other guys that are on other roster. Yeah, you can. Like, sure, yeah, can. Suspend them.
What are they, escape? Sure, yeah. It's like a coach moving on. Like, Pete Carroll's like, yeah. Well, sorry, USC. I left the program in freaking shambles, and Reggie Bush is shamed for the rest of his life. But, yay, Seattle, let's go to the Super Bowl.
So wait, the Astros just have, like, five guys, and they got to fill in the rest with minor leaguers?
Be good.
Yeah.
But you put restrictions on it. Yeah, but you say you put restrictions on it. It can only be high A, advanced, and below.
Okay.
Right? Like, so, like single A, advanced, and below. Like, that's all you can fill them with.
All right.
Come on, this is the Texas way, right? This is the Texas way. SMU had to do this, and Baylor had to do it in basketball. SMU football, Baylor basketball, now Astros baseball.
Yeah, baseball death penalty. I like it. I'm here for it.
But I love it. So don't come at us with Bet should be punished or, you know, Gerrit Cole. Everyone should be punished, and it should be severely. Is that going to happen?
No.
Who the hell knows at this point? We got more on Cody Bellinger. We got more on Myles Garrett coming up in the 5 o'clock hour. But up next, big weekend in the Mountain West Conference, big weekend for the West as San Diego State goes for 26-0 this week. And also a big moment for a guy on our station. He is very objective, but Ed Graney is watching his Aztecs very closely.
The Three is brought to you by Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. Call today at 577-2600 to receive a $500 coupon towards your appraisal or any purchase or refinance. Dial up Dustin now. 577-2600.
Look what Dutch did. They got old fast. He went and got, you know, whether it was Yanni or whoever, like Malachi coming in.
It's Cofield and Company.
They're throwing water on Dutch. They're hugging that trophy in the locker room, going crazy. Line at Boise will hover 6.5-7. I think this might be the one where they get caught.
But I need to tell you something.
Oh, yeah, Valentine's Day.
This is a banger,
dude. Hey, guys, in about half an hour, we're going to talk a little bit about Nevada. We're going to break down Jalen and Jazz and Kane. Adam, what's going on here?
With what?
What's going on with Graney? Come on now.
Dutch.
You know we know he's hypersensitive about being called an Aztecs fan, and I'm listening yesterday to him with Esposito. And it's Dutch like seven times. And then who? Yanni?
Well,
like Malachi?
I agree.
It's Vegas. We're not San Diego.
They're boys.
We're doing first names.
I think he does it for everyone. But then it is a little over the top.
Can I start calling TJ Altsberger Tej?
Well, he calls him TJ.
Call him Tej.
TJ or TJO.
It's our markets.
TJO.
Sure.
It's our markets.
Yeah.
It's our conference.
Stop. Well, we have time later on to talk about what Weirs is doing in Albuquerque.
Weirsy?
Yeah.
Yeah. That's my guy. You know that.
Weirsy.
Yeah, you know that's my guy. You know that.
Weirsy. I love it.
P. Weirs?
I don't know that anybody's ever called him Weirsy.
Like Weirsy. Weirsy.
I was going like Lil Wayne, like Weirsy. Yeah. Weirsy? That yeah. works.
Lil P. Weirs.
Also, later in the show, UNLV clearly has the most hulked up head coaches for men's basketball and football. That was insane last night. That's
first,
coming up at 4 o'clock.
First red
Marcus
flag.
Arroyo versus the Air Horn. Easy, everybody. Easy.
It makes a mark, though. People remember that.
For years.
Oh, they do. And they remember TJ Altsberger's battles with the air horn as well. So what do you guys think happens this weekend with San Diego State? They're taking on Boise. Well, this is a tough one for me because I don't want to root for San Diego State, but who can root for Leon Rice? Yikes.
Yeah, it's a tough decision. Nobody likes him. Nobody wants San Diego State. Well, I mean, San Diego State running the table would probably be good for the league to get a one seed.
You know what? Can we break in here? Because I just heard Sportsline talking about this, and they were debating rivalries, and then they were saying that essentially UNLV fans should root for San Diego State. I mean, we've been down this path before. Can we stop?
Well,
what do you mean, of course?
It's good for the league.
Stop. No one cares. Yeah, no one outside of the Mountain West cares how much about have we San Diego State and if it helps UNLV.
It's not perception that I'm talking about. It's strictly financial, an objective measure that it helps the league to get a one seed that makes a deep run in the tournament. Yeah. It just does. It's not really a debatable topic.
But it is debatable. Well,
it's not debatable that you get more money, you get a benefit of a team doing that, and then if a team makes a deep run, all of a sudden you get a better deal. What did we just talk about with the media deals? No, it wasn't as good. Boise State, their football, a little bit down. Would help if they won a national championship. It would help if San Diego State made a deep run in the NCAA tournament. If they're a Final Four team, that helps.
Yeah, Adam, you're all talking facts, and everything you said is factually correct. That's fine, but being a fan, I don't think, is being dealt, you know, sitting in facts and all that. It's about emotion. I think if you're an actual like hardcore fan, a lot of these like normal sports fans would be like, no, I don't want San Diego State to have success so that the conference can actually have a step up and we can blah, blah, blah. And all. No, they don't care. They just see the opposing team that they don't like, and they don't want them to have success. Everything you're saying is right, but I don't think people view their fandom. I think a majority of people don't view their fandom in those terms.
Right. Well, because here's what I'm telling you, because you're right too. Like, that's absolutely true.
Yeah, like
true.
We can both be
people
correct.
Don't do that. Right. That's fine. But then next time when what does the Mountain West get a better TV deal? Well, you were screaming wanting San Diego State to lose. That's what you got. You got what you wanted, so enjoy it.
You're right. Well, right. The TV deal will be crippled if San Diego State – makes the Sweet 16, not the Elite 8.
Yeah.
I'm saying they want them to go to the Final Four. You want a one seed to go to the Final Four.
No, you should. I mean, if you're going to be all practical about this and logical about it, then I guess you should be rooting for Utah State to be a legit second team that can make it at large.
Of course.
Couldn't you make the argument, too, that we just had a Mountain West team the last 2 years make pretty good runs in the NCAA tournament?
Right. And we don't really need an absolute Wars? Powerhouse. And
one seed that went to the Final Four?
Well, I don't think one seed Final Four making it to Sweet 16s and deep runs. What do you mean? What's the difference?
There's a huge difference. It bolsters the conference. It brings everybody up. If you're on the bubble in the future, they say that if they don't base it on what they've done in the previous years, they do. And if you have teams that are making Final Four runs, all of a sudden you can look back and say, hey, they should probably get more teams into the tournament. They should probably have a better – a better benefit of the doubt on Selection Sunday. All of those things happen when the conference does well.
ESPN Las Vegas.
Hey, Raiders on three. 1, 2, 3.
Red.
Home of the Raiders fan. Now, back to Cofield and Company, live at the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas.
We're in all the cool spots today. Cofield here in Albuquerque. It is a lovely city. I know Adam has called it Fresno Light.
Yeah.
What do you have in the rankings? You have Fresno ahead of Albuquerque or behind Albuquerque? Yeah, behind Albuquerque.
Well, Fresno's at least drivable to cool places in California. So I'm going to go.
Fresno's underrated.
Fresno ahead of Albuquerque, even though Fresno is a disaster.
These are my kind of cities. I'm a man of the people. I like Albuquerque.
A lot of gray.
You going to that taco place?
It's right across the street. Nice. You bet your bippy. Yeah, I'll be there.
What's a bit?
So last night at the VGK game, it was crazy. There were all these celebrities hanging out, and I'm seeing all these different tweets from people. And we saw a tweet late last night from Gary Tuchman at CNN, who's in town because, you know, Nevada is the center of the political universe this weekend. He was enjoying the hockey game, and we wanted to talk a little sports and politics with him on this Friday. And he was nice enough to join us on short notice. How are you, sir?
Steve, it's great to be with you.
Appreciate you coming on. So, what made you go to the Vegas Golden Knights game, and did you have a good time?
Well, first of all, I'm a huge hockey fan, huge sports fan.
Okay,
I've been a reporter at CNN for 30 years, and I travel around the country and the world on my job. One of the main things I love to do when I'm done working is to go to a baseball, football, basketball, or hockey game if something's nice in town. I've been to almost every Major League Baseball stadium in my career. I still got to get to four. That's it. Every National League city. And then I try to get to, you know, hockey and basketball, and I haven't been to your new arena. I haven't seen your new team in person. This is an amazing team to have the first year. The Golden Knights had is incredible. It's not like the Mets of 1962 who were 40 wins, 120 losses. It was the opposite. So it's nice to be part of it. It's such a great stadium, and when you get out of there, it's festive, and it was a great game. So everything was great last night.
Did it feel different from a hockey standpoint? Because I know you made a comment about getting Atlanta, you know, back in the fold. But other hockey games you've been to, is Vegas a little bit different in terms of the music and the noise?
Yeah, well, first of all, yes, I am based in Atlanta, and we've lost two hockey teams, and it's a damn shame. Atlanta has devoted hockey fans. There's lots of teams in the Southeast. We should get a team back. That being said, NHL's great, so I go to as many games as I can, and being in that stadium, yes, it was a different vibe to it. You know, seeing dice rolling across the screen for entertainment certainly fit the motif of Las Vegas, but it was very celebratory, and it was just great seeing so many new fans who obviously were so waiting for a team to come to this city, have their team, have a great team, and had so much fun. It was just great observing that. I really enjoyed it.
You mentioned the Mets there for a second about an expansion team. Who'd you grow up rooting for in baseball?
Well, I was born and raised in Chicago, and then I moved to New Jersey as a kid, so I'm a combination of Chicago and New Jerseyan, but I'm a diehard Cubs fan. So back in 2016, we hit nirvana when we finally won a World Series, and now my life can end peacefully and happily knowing that happened. I was afraid that wouldn't happen. Not that my life's going to end. I'm planning on being around for a long time. But I didn't know if I'd ever see the Cubs win a World Series, and it was an amazing, amazing day. And I, interestingly enough, and mixing news into this as a newsman, so I'm a reporter for the Anderson Cooper 360 program. That's what my stories are on that show first. And I was doing a story the night of Game 7 of the World Series, Cubs-Indians, at a Donald Trump rally, because it was a few days before Election Day, and we couldn't take off because it's such an important news time for us. I always vowed I'd be at Game 7 of any Cub World Series. Instead, I have one brother. He was my ambassador. He was there. But after the rally, I went to a big sports bar, lots of other Cub fans in Orlando, Florida, where the rally is, and we watched the Cubs win the World Series, and it was awesome.
It's Gary Tuchman, CNN, on Cofield & Company. So give us your take. You're a baseball fan. Give us your take on what's unfolded here with the Astros and the cheating scandal and whatever that was yesterday, trying to apologize but not really apologizing.
You know what's scary about all this is that, I mean, let me ask you guys this question. I'm going to pose a question to you. Do you think the Astros are the only team that have done this? I mean, that's the thing that's scary about it, is that how many other teams have done it? Everyone says, you know, the Dodgers maybe should be given the World Series championship because of what the Astros did. I'm not saying the Dodgers did it. I'm not saying any other team did it. But how do we know other teams didn't do it? The fact that so many people were involved in this and were not so concerned that not one person spoke out makes you think it could be widespread. Now, I don't know. But, you know, as a journalist, that's something we should be looking into and finding out. I mean, it's just terrible. And it's, you know, we all grew up hearing about the Black Sox scandal, and that was a different time, early 20th century. But you never thought you'd see that kind of cheating again. And it saddens me a great deal because, you know, of the four major sports, baseball is my favorite. I've been going to games since I'm 3 years old. I love it. And I guess I was surprised. I was naive. But now I'm thinking, how can the Astros have been the only team that did this?
Right. Well, I'll tell you what I do like, and it's just developing now. The players are starting to show up at spring training in Arizona and Florida. And guys are willing to blast the Astros, which I'll tell you, I think that's one of the more depressing things about the steroid era, is that no one stepped forward as this thing was going on for 20 years. They knew people were doing it. No one would step out of line and go after other players. The rules are gone now. We just saw Cody Bellinger, one of the big stars in baseball from the Dodgers, come out and just blast everyone today. So that'll probably blow the lid off this whole thing. But we're probably due for darker days with baseball in the next year or two, Gary. It's not going to get, you know, better immediately. This is going to take a while.
I mean, do you think other teams have been doing this?
Yes. Maybe not to the elaborate level, but yeah, no, there's no doubt. And I also think the guys who, I mean, here's a crazy thing. A lot of these dudes who are running the Astros and came up with this elaborate plan were with the Cardinals. So I would assume when they were with the Cardinals, they came up with the idea. So this may go back a while.
Yeah, I mean, listen, as we all know, you know, when anything through your normal intelligence, if you can, throughout history in baseball, you know, they flash signs from the center field bleachers, but just to do it in this way, this high tech way, you know, I just was really surprised about it. It really caught me off guard, and it just, you know, you think the players get paid so much money now they don't need to cheat because everyone makes a great living. And, you know, everyone involved in baseball. Back in the old days, you know, when I was a kid in the 1960s, I remember as a little kid, the first player who made over $100,000 a year. And, you know, and you think back about that, it was a relatively innocent time. But there was motivation for players to cheat back in those days because they didn't make very much money. You know, I became friendly before the end of his life with Phil Cavaretta. Phil Cavaretta was the MVP of the 1945 Chicago Cubs. That was their last pennant winner before 2016. I met him when he was in his 80s. He was a hero of my father, who's now in his 80s. And he lived in Atlanta, and I met him, and we talked. And he told me he was the MVP of the World Series, of the National League that year when the Cubs won the pennant. They lost in the World Series to the Detroit Tigers in 7 games. But he was the MVP. He ended up being a Cubs manager for years after that. He was one of the most well-known Cubs ever. And he had to work in a suit store selling suits to supplement his income when he was an MVP for the Chicago Cubs. So, yeah, there was motivation to cheat back then to make more money. That's why the Black Sox scandal happened. But now, it's kind of shocking to me.
That's the voice of Gary Tuchman from CNN. He's in town working on a story on the Nevada caucuses, which are coming up. We are front and center in the election. We're talking about cheating in baseball. Are we confident that there will be no cheating in our elections this year?
Yeah. Well, that certainly has been a big storyline over the last few years. And, you know, I mean, you know, my job is not to give opinions. My job is to tell the facts. That's what we do. And I will say that for the rest of my life. I've been at CNN for 30 years. If I ever gave my opinions, I'd lose my job. I don't want to lose my job. What I can tell you categorically is the Russians interfered in the election. What did that cause? What happened because of that? There's no way to ever know. There's no way to count it. There's no way to categorize it. But they cheated. They cheated in our election. There's no question about it. Could it happen again? Everyone who is knowledgeable about it thinks it could happen again. They're working like hell to make sure it doesn't happen again. But that certainly is an issue we are looking at. The fact remains that this is the greatest democracy in the world. We've protected our voting system for so many years. And the goal for everybody, whether you're a Democrat, Republican, Independent, or you don't care, is to make sure we keep it protected.
Well, we saw a little bit of a mess with the Iowa caucuses. We have our caucuses coming up. Should we be confident that everything's going to be okay with our process coming up next week?
You know, I've been covering elections at CNN since 1992. That's a long time. 28 years, we've never had this kind of problem before. That's why it's so shocking what happened in Iowa. I mean, I've been going to Iowa every 4 years since then. They're great people. They take their responsibility seriously, and they're devastated this happened. People of Iowa who are politically aware and like to visit the candidates because they're afraid this is not going to be the first in the nation presidential contest in 2024, and it very well may not be. That being said, that's why it's a big story, because it's unusual. Do not assume that's going to happen in Nevada. I don't assume it's going to happen in Nevada. I assume it's going to be a great caucus a week from Saturday in Nevada. But everyone will be keeping an eye on it because of what happened in Iowa.
Shouldn't we be first? And maybe we change the primaries, if that's fine. We have a battleground state, a diverse state. It just makes sense that we should be first.
Well, I'm telling you, you guys should have a whole show in 4 years lobbying for it, and maybe the poobahs of the Democratic or Republican parties will listen to you, and Nevada will be the first.
That would make a lot of sense. we've had a lot of controversy this week with, you know, the unions and Bernie Sanders and getting into some heat out here. How much impact is this kind of battle going to have on how the caucus turns out in your mind?
Well, I mean, that is just one thing. This is a huge caucus. We can say that. The reason we're here, I'm doing a story that is scheduled to air tonight on CNN, by the way, and it's a story about the African-American vote here in Nevada. African-Americans comprise about 9% of the state, so this is the first diverse state. Also, many Latinos in the state, even a higher percentage, but Iowa and New Hampshire are not particularly diverse states. So this is a very important caucus. It'll be the first one where we have all the Democratic candidates running in a diverse state. So this could be very decisive. This and South Carolina, which is a week after Nevada.
Gary, so I just got politically involved probably about 2 presidential elections ago, and I've been trying to take it much more seriously. In all seriousness, what is a caucus? And the other part of the question is, am I the only person that Elizabeth Warren keeps texting and asking me to come out to stuff?
Well, you're definitely not the only person. I'm on all their mailing lists. I get every one of the candidates emails. So every day it's clogged, and I see them all. So that is something that did not happen, by the way, in 1992 when I started. So it's a different time. That was before the internet.
So sure,
but what it is, in a nutshell, though, what it is, a primary is simply you go to your voting booth, you cast your vote and your ballot, and you go home. It takes 2 minutes. A caucus is a very involved process. A lot of people criticize it for being too involved because you can't just show up and leave. You go in, what just happened in Iowa a week and a half ago, you go into a gymnasium or a huge room, and then everyone says, okay, who's for Bernie Sanders? Who's for Joe Biden? Who's for Pete Buttigieg? Who's for Amy Klobuchar? You go in these different corners of the room. And the way it works is after they have all the people there and everyone goes in a different corner of the room, any candidate who didn't have 15% is no longer quote-unquote viable. And then you have to go find another candidate. So it's like musical chairs of politics. And ultimately, everyone's in a different corner of the room. They count the number of people. That count goes to the state, and they figure out the total counts all over the state, and that's how a caucus is determined. So it's a lengthier, more involved, but it's almost like a game show compared to a primary.
Two-part question coming out of that for you here. And I guess it might be tricky, but how many candidates don't survive past Nevada? How many do we eliminate here? And who is the next one to go?
Well, I don't know who the next one to go will be. What I can tell you is this is categorical. Joe Biden needs to do well here. We've done stories in the beginning of this election cycle where he does very well among African-American voters. This is his first opportunity to be in a state that has a significant number of African-American voters. He has done very poorly, relatively speaking, in Iowa and New Hampshire. He's a former vice president of the United States. 8 years, was in the Senate for decades, and if he doesn't do well in Nevada and South Carolina, it's a problem. Now, one will figure he would go on to Super Tuesday, which is right after South Carolina, where a bunch of states have primaries and caucuses. But if he can't do well in these two states, it'll be very problematic for him. Other candidates, though, that you want to keep an eye on are Pete Buttigieg and Amy Klobuchar. Pete Buttigieg won in Iowa based on the number of delegates he got. He came in second place in New Hampshire. Amy Klobuchar had a very strong third-place finish in New Hampshire. Those two candidates have not done particularly well in polls with diverse voters. If they do better than expected, it will be very good for them, but there's a chance they won't do well at all, and that could propel them back to where people thought they were before this all began, the primary caucus process, not necessarily in the running. So we will learn a lot from this state.
That's the voice of Gary Tuchman. Last couple of questions, Gary. Gary, of course,
yep.
From CNN. Going back to what Adam was asking about and joking about the text, what kind of feedback do you get from the candidates? Like, they keep sending them, so I guess they must work. All of us seem to just delete them immediately. What sort of feedback do they get from it? Is it working?
Yeah, I mean, you can opt out if you don't want them, so that's why I don't feel guilty about sending them. If you don't want them, you say unsubscribe. But yeah, no, anything that gets your name out there works. Whether in the old days, back when people like Theodore Roosevelt were president, they had newspapers and that was it. They put an ad in the newspaper or a billboard. Now it's everything: billboard, television, internet, radio. I mean, you just try to get your name out there in as many ways as possible. Banner planes.
Instagram. Instagram, I just saw that.
Everything.
Yeah,
so the thing is to get your name out there. It's kind of like in our business. You want to get your name out there. I want to get my name out there. And the more you get your name out there, the better you'll do if what you offer is positive and is good. If you have a scoundrel who's getting his name out there, hopefully they won't win. If you have a great guy who's getting his name out there, hopefully he will win or she will win. And that's the idea, though. If you're a good candidate, you're able to get enough money and get your name out there, that's how you become president of the United States.
I need to lean on you for your knowledge of presidential elections, in terms of history and incumbents. So it looks like President Trump is going to be in Nevada, in Las Vegas. Is there any time in history where the incumbent went to states? I mean, obviously, both parties are technically up for grabs, but the incumbent's got the lock on it. But has this happened in the past where you've got a president who's basically going into the states when the Democrats are there, and he's like, hey, I'm going to steal thunder. I'm going to rain on their parade.
Yeah, no, this is very unusual what he's doing, and it's a well-crafted plan to try to take some of the news coverage and time away from the Democratic candidates who are here. Donald Trump had a rally in New Hampshire before the New Hampshire primary. And it's something that they think is a good way to take attention with the Democrats and give attention to the incumbent president. So expect to see more of that. But that's not something we've seen in the past. I mean, there probably have been some degrees of that where incumbent president was having a rally close to the time of a primary caucus. But this seems like a well-developed strategy.
I'm going to close with your wiki page, which is always a horrific thing to do because they're generally they're never accurate. But is it true? Was your father in the toy business? Was he in charge of Child World?
Yes. So I was a very lucky. My brother and I were very lucky young men growing up. That my dad actually was at Child World, but before that, he was one of the senior vice presidents of Toys R Us and one of the people who started the Toys R Us at the very beginning. And I was telling you at the beginning, I grew up. I was born in Chicago, then moved to New Jersey. And what happened was my dad was with the toy store called Bargain Town in Chicago, Illinois. Toys R Us was headquartered in Washington. They merged together to make Toys R Us even bigger, and they moved the headquarters to New Jersey, and that's why I ended up there. But, yes, my dad was in the toy business for many years. He's a great dad. I have a great mom and dad and brother and wife and three children. I just want to give a shout-out to my family, who aren't listening, by the way. I told them to go online and listen.
Nice.
Yeah, and the one thing I want to tell you, though, you think I was spoiled having a dad in the toy business, but I will tell you, my parents didn't want to spoil me, and I still, to this day, in my 50s, still think that I had fewer toys than my friends did because my parents did not want to spoil.
Yeah, I was going to ask you, like, how easy was it for him to go, no, sorry, we can't get that toy for you? And you're like, what are you talking about? Of course you can get the toy.
Yeah, what are you? Exactly.
Gary, thank you so much. We appreciate it. And what can people look for over the next couple of days from you and CNN?
Yeah, unless there's big breaking news tonight on our show, Anderson Cooper 360, we'll have that story I was talking about, what African-Americans here in the state of Nevada, a group of more than 30 people we talked to, think about these presidential candidates.
Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure talking to you guys. Best wishes.
Thanks, sir.
Thank you.
There you go. Gary Tuchman. Did I box him in there? He's like, I didn't get a lot of toys. Take it easy.
I mean, it's still bitter. That's pretty good. That's the best part.
Well, because I think he probably heard it all the time. He probably still hears it.
I still would be, too. I'd be furious.
Who on this show, between the three of us, who do you think was the biggest toy guy and who was the guy who didn't really care about toys?
That's easy.
That's John.
I was the biggest toy guy.
Yeah, of course. No question.
God, freaking blue blood. Unbelievable.
Well, I just, you know, I had an imagination. I didn't grow up bitter and angry like I believe the two of you did. I mean, you guys grew up on the East Coast. I would assume that just comes with the territory.
Oh, maybe. No, not at all. I grew up around a bunch of people who loved toys and got toys. Actually, well, my younger brother was a freaking lunatic for toys.
I just picture Steve with, like, holding two trucks and just bagging them together all the time.
That's also part of the equation. Like, I feel like the toy industry peaked, like, in my childhood. You know what I mean? Like, that's when action figures were dope and they tied them into movies. And I know they did in the 70s with the Star Wars and whatnot. But, like, toy industry was booming. I was at the toy store all the time. Toys R Us, Jeffrey Dollars. Come on, man.
Steve just had Legos.
Yeah.
Lincoln Logs. Lincoln,
I was going to say Lincoln Logs. Like, yeah, have fun with that.
All right, I'm old. I'll admit it. Jeff Grammer from the Albuquerque Journal is coming up in less than 10 as Cofield & Company rolls on a Friday.
Join the conversation on Twitter at ESPN Las Vegas. Now, back to Cofield & Company, live at the Golden Nugget, Las Vegas.
This part of the show brought to you by Dustin DeHart, Nova Home Loans. Call him today at 577-2600. He's helped thousands of clients get the best home loan possible and then refinance into a better one. You need a second opinion on a quote you have right now or need to get that mortgage tuned up. I'm telling you, go in and do it. It takes 10 minutes. You'll get a bunch of options. Could be something attractive. Lower rate. Wouldn't that be nice? Call Dustin DeHart. 577-2600. 577-2600. Dustin DeHart at Nova Home Loans. So I just wanted to update you on what we were just talking about. We were mentioning President Trump will be in town next week, February 20th, 11:30, inside Las Vegas Metro Police Department, and he'll be delivering remarks at a Hope for Prisoners graduation ceremony. It's a cause that helps inmates reintegrate into society. Very exciting times. We are the center of the universe. As Adam just asked Gary Tuchman from CNN, we should be first. Which is consistent with Adam's attitude about Las Vegas.
Yeah.
We are the best at everything. There's no need to ever leave Las Vegas. Everywhere else sucks. So I like
most,
it. You're consistent, Adam.
Most other places. But I also really enjoy when
you do
people,
like some other places.
When people say we're anti-Vegas.
Like, oh my God.
It's ridiculous. We're the most pro-Vegas people that have ever lived.
Well, if we express any concerns about troubles around Las Vegas, then you're anti-Vegas. Okay.
Just want it better.
So I did want to come clean on the whole toy thing because when we were talking to Mr. Tuchman, he must have got a lifetime of just chop busting. His dad It was with both Child World, which was a big toy store on the East Coast and maybe the Midwest, and also Toys R Us. And you guys started mocking on me for toys. I didn't really like toys.
Shocking.
Shocker.
Nobody, you didn't even have to say that. Nobody's surprised by that.
We're going
to
talk about something surprising?
I was a sports fan at a young age, and I had no problem just sitting there doodling like stats in a notebook. Remember the sports pig, Adam, with his notebooks? Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, Pig and I shared that. Aside from me eventually being the size of Sports Pig, we shared that love, just writing numbers down.
Do you want to know something? Like, the most obnoxious story that my parents like always tell about me is that I would sit around when I was like 5 to 7 and just demand that they write a bunch of numbers so I could do long division.
I don't believe it.
It's the worst thing ever.
I do.
Yes. It's demand. So stupid. Like, give me more numbers, more division. Like,
more
why?
Numbers.
Why?
You know all the numbers. Like,
why? It's just so obnoxious. I hate young me. I hate current me, too. But young me was just so obnoxious.
You got off to an early start. You were trying to embarrass and shame your parents.
Yeah. Yeah. Not enough numbers. Give me more.
4 o'clock hours on the way. We're going to check in with the dean of the media in Albuquerque, talk to a little Mountain West, and also the upheaval that has been New Mexico Lobos basketball all season long.
Visit Cofield's Corner on LVSportsNetwork.com for access to the latest podcasts and best interviews.